Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Something I thought about this weekend as I was reading the news of the unrest and the protests, the looting, the violence, the various athletes who participated in protests and members even of the sports media community. And to the best of my knowledge, all of those athletes were involved in peaceful protests, which is not the same as looting, right? So looting and protesting are not the same thing. Not every protester is a looter. And in many cases, the looters are not protesting at all. They're just taking advantage of a situation. But I did see the likes of Malcolm Jenkins, I think was one, Jaylen Brown of the Celtics, who reportedly drove from Boston to Georgia to be involved in some of the peaceful protests that were taking place in the Atlanta area. And there are other athletes and other members of the media who also were part of peaceful protests, which I support wholeheartedly. I think it's an incredible freedom that we have in the United States of America to be able to express our opinions, to be able to peacefully demonstrate, not criminally, but peacefully demonstrate. And it's unfortunate that some of them erupt in violence and that there's fear and anxiety and there's tension that threatens to boil over. And then at times, you have people getting hurt and people getting attacked. I mean, there are videos out there where there are journalists who are getting attacked by again, not, I hesitate to call them protesters, but more by looters and others who are kind of taking advantage of what's going on. So I hate it when they turn violent. And that, of course, is not okay. I mean, that's not what's protected by the Constitution. But the ability to express ourselves and the ability to share our feelings and our emotions and to do it in a way where we can be seen and we can be heard as Americans, that's not a privilege and a freedom that every other country has. I speak as someone who has spent extensive time in Cuba over the last 5 years. You get arrested and thrown in jail, maybe never to be seen or heard from for a very long time if you express your disagreement with the government. And in some cases, that means death. And I know there are protesters who were arrested and sometimes they feel like they didn't do anything worthy of arrest and law enforcement believes they did. And so you have protesters who are getting bailed out of jail too. And so there's all kinds of gray areas there. So I'm not suggesting that, again, I know all the details of every protest, so please don't take it that way. But I do know that in places like Cuba or in communist China, North Korea, obviously, you can get thrown in jail and you cannot see the light of day for years, if ever again. If you are speaking dissenting opinions or you are sharing publicly your negative opinions about the government or policies or law. I mean, that's just not allowed in every country. And I'm grateful that we have that freedom. And I'm also grateful for our law enforcement that protect and enforce that freedom in many cases. All right. So it always breaks my heart that we cast these stereotypical nets over every people group, whether men, whether women, whether black, whether white, whether purple, whether yellow, whether red, whether law enforcement, whether protesters. As I said, not every protester is a looter. In fact, very few of the protesters are looters. Not every member of law enforcement is racist. Not every member is corrupt. Most of them, the majority of them, are protecting us and putting their lives on the line for those people they don't even know and for people who often are, you know, are putting them in danger too. And so I've seen you know, the various videos of law enforcement who've laid down their batons and have walked with protesters, which I think is amazing. And I've seen the videos and the photos of protesters who are doing their best to remain peaceful and protect law enforcement from getting in the crosshairs. And so there are reasons to hope out there, even when we see fires and we see damage and we see buildings going up in flames and we see people getting arrested and getting hurt and getting injured. We see violence in some cases, the extreme where, you know, you've seen a couple people who've died over the course of these violent demonstrations, and people losing their livelihoods, as if the virus wasn't bad enough and the economy has not already taken major hits. Now you've got people who are losing their businesses because of looting and the you know, the stuff that's taking place in the name of justice. And that part breaks my heart. But as I was thinking about it this weekend, I say this on my show a lot of times when it comes to sports, but now applying it to a larger surface area and not a microcosm, but a macrocosm. We're better because we don't agree. We're better because we're not all the same. Of course, you've heard the term melting pot in the United States of America. Of course, it's part of our history books. It's part of our fabric as a country. We're a melting pot. We'll take everything. You know, you can get to the United States of America, and I know it's difficult, and I get all the challenges. But going back to our foundations as a country, we were made up of all different types of people groups from all parts of the world. And that makes us better. Why? Because we can share our backgrounds, our cultures, our languages, our ethnicities, our food. We can share what makes us different. If we're all the same and we think all the same, if we believe that everybody out there should look like us and think like us, well, A, that's not realistic, and B, that's a little bit like what Hitler wanted to do, right? He wanted to turn the entire world into people that looked like him and acted and spoke like him. It's not necessary. It's dangerous. It's evil. But it's also wiping out what makes us beautiful as a nation. When we don't all agree, but we communicate about the ways we don't agree, well, then often we can find some compromise and we can see the perspectives of people who are not like us. Color is only one part of what makes us unique. We're also shaped by where we grew up and how we grew up and what our family backgrounds were like and the people that poured into us and the schooling we had, the education, you know, the jobs that we have. We're a product of every single day that we walk on this earth. It makes us a little more of who we are. And sometimes that's hardened and that's criminal and that's evil and it's tragic and it's awful and it's devastating and it's heartbreaking. But very often, as we grow and change, we get older, we have more experiences, again, based on color, based on geography, based on education, based on our family and our friends. Now we're more well-rounded. I think I'm a lot more balanced as a human being now over the course of, you know, these last, whatever, 20 years of my career, but also looking back on my childhood, because I've come in contact with more people who are not like me. And if you listen and you ask questions, there are ways to do it that are peaceful. Am I ever going to see eye to eye with the majority of other people? Probably not. I mean, that's okay. What I always ask you to do on the show is when you disagree, just be respectful. I don't care if you agree with me. Life would be boring if we all agreed and we would never learn anything. But if we can be respectful about it, sadly, of course, as I said to start the show, that's just not realistic. We're not all going to love each other. We're not all going to see eye to eye. We're not all going to respect people who don't agree with us. There is evil in this world. There is racism. There is discrimination. There is prejudice. There's anger. There's frustration. There's hurt. There are people who can't let go of their past. There are people who can't see life from anyone else's perspective and refuse to try. And that's our world. That's not just America. That's our world. It's fallen. It's imperfect. It's never going to be perfect. It doesn't mean we stop trying, but it means we're realistic about it. And so what's happening in our nation over the past few days? It's heavy and it's hard to watch. It's hard to see. It's scary. I know you are all probably in the same boat. You have friends or family who are very close to protests, very close to the violence. I have friends who were transplanted from their homes with three small kids. There's curfews around the country. There's people losing property and businesses. And there's other people who have lost their lives. And I hate that. I mean, it's crushing going back to what we saw with George Floyd and everything that's happened since then. If there's anything to hate, hate that. Hate the evil. Hate the criminal. Hate, I don't mean the criminal as the person, but the criminal activity. It's hard sometimes to see a way out of it and to see how it can ever settle. And it's hard to sometimes even know how to pray. As someone who believes in prayer and the power of prayer, it's hard sometimes to know how to pray. And so I've asked God, like, what exactly should I be praying about here? I would love for there to be peace and kumbaya, but again, it's just not realistic. And protests are an important part of our nation's history. So I'm praying for safety, praying for reason, praying for communication, praying for peace, praying for protection for people who are in very vulnerable situations and stand to lose a whole lot, even if they're not involved at all. But also praying for change, hoping that that happens. And honest, did not start out this hour expecting to talk about any of this, but hearing the way we opened the show and just believing that, like a rainbow, the various colors, and that's very simplistic, of course, but a rainbow's beautiful because it's made up of a bunch of different colors and they reflect the other colors. And as people, and as the United States of America, we're more beautiful as a nation because we don't all look alike and because we don't all sound alike. And yeah, that creates tension. And in some cases, it's taken so far to the point where it's criminal and evil and it's awful. But I still believe that being different, what's different is what makes us stronger. If we choose to listen and to figure it out and to work together. That's not always the case. I hope it will be the case soon. We got to figure it out, right? We'll burn our nation down if we continue the way that we're going. And after everything we've been through over the last 3 months, it feels like we can't afford to do that. And I don't necessarily mean afford as in finances and economy, but there's a major piece of that too, right? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Some of this is off the cuff. Some of it I thought about ahead of time. Some of it I just share because it's in my heart. And you all know me. I try to stay as apolitical as possible. So there's no political component to it. People much smarter than me who make a lot more money than me. They're the ones in the political arena. I'm just speaking to you as an American, as a girl who's seen a lot, as a girl who, you know, is heartbroken and sad and frustrated and disturbed and devastated as you all are to see what's happening. But stereotypes are dangerous. Stereotypes lead to racism. Stereotypes also lead to prejudice. Stereotypes lead to us drawing our lines in the stands and saying, I'm not crossing that line. And I don't want to listen to anything that you have to say. There's got to be some compromise. Oh, and that would be the perfect segue to baseball, right? It's gross and it's lame and it's you can laugh at me. But I mean, sports is a microcosm of real life. I say it a lot. And nothing happens. No compromise, no action, no agreement ever takes place without communication. And so I come back to that a lot. And I know that's my bread and butter, but I hope that there can be some communication so we can listen to one another in baseball and then in the rest of our lives where it's much more critical. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can find me on Twitter, A Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. I've been spending some time talking about the Baseball Players Association proposal. There's also various ideas out there about how basketball might return. And my disappointment over hearing that the NBA is targeting July 31st as when the season might resume. I actually spoke to a friend of mine who works in the NBA. He's embedded in the NBA. He doesn't get it either. He doesn't understand why they're pushing it so far out. So we'll give you the various pieces. I mean, same thing with the NHL. Why can't they come back to do training camp before July 10th? There are very few NBA and NHL facilities that are not now open for at least individual workouts. In fact, there was another state that invited its sports teams to return just as recently as Sunday. So we'll kind of get to the pieces of the NBA plan. And while we don't have the proposal yet from Adam Silver and the board of governors, we do have various reports and ideas out there, concepts. So we'll let you hear some of those and a little bit of the reaction. It's kind of where baseball was maybe 3-4 weeks ago when we were just hearing lots of plans, where the NHL was until it revealed its return to play framework. It, you know, every sport is in various stages, but I'm just kind of stunned that hoops and hockey might not play any games until the last week of July or early August. I don't get that.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
MLB insider John Heyman reacting to what we've seen so far in Major League Baseball. The Players Association has come up with its counter proposal. It does not take steps toward the owners. It runs the opposite direction. No pay cuts. Also, in addition to that, we need a $100 million salary advance across the board. So we can have expenses covered as we get back to our markets and begin to train again for the season. We want 114 games instead of 82, whereas the owners have indicated we'll actually lose more money the more games we add. And they look at that because every single game causes a loss of revenue if there are no fans in the stands. Still, that to me is that's a bad reason. However they split up the losses for 2020, to have fewer games because it loses you less money, that's gross. No, don't give me some line about how baseball can be part of the healing process and we want baseball to return because we know fans would really crave it and will, you know, would really bring some joy and some distraction, and then give me the, hey, we want fewer games because then we'll lose less money. So we'll see what baseball does in return, but baseball players have said no pay cuts. We're taking prorated salaries. That's it. And we want a salary advance. And if guys choose to opt out because they don't want to play with the virus still being prevalent, well, then you can't dock us a year of service either. We may not get paid. It depends on our risk. But you can't dock us for a year of service for something that's beyond our control. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Our toll-free line is sponsored by Geico. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. Let's talk to Mark, who's in Fort Lauderdale. Mark, welcome to After Hours.
First of all, Amy, welcome back. It's great to hear your voice again.
You mean after the weekend? Because I didn't go anywhere otherwise.
No, it's just great to hear your voice back overnight. I mean, you know, you did so much. It's just, you're a soothing voice in a calming time, and you're a calming voice in a tough time in this country right now.
Thank you, sir.
I want to talk to you about the baseball situation. It's ironic that we're talking about this in the year that one of the great people that's ever put foot on this world, the late Marvin Miller, was scheduled to be inducted to the Baseball Hall of Fame. The owners have made a fortune in the last 10 years. As you know, their revenue has increased. Mm-hmm. But not only have they made money from the teams, they made money from a lot of side deals, like the Atlanta Braves are part of a public company, Liberty Media. So the public record of revenue was $427 million last year when they had a $128 million payroll. The Cardinals have Ballpark Village. 3 weeks ago, during a pandemic, which is hard to believe that they would do this in a public relations move, the San Francisco Giants got the development rights behind the Covey Cove to build $1 million condominiums. So the baseball players, 65% of them make a little bit over minimum wage. Yeah, sure, there's Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw, and thankfully we have people like Clayton Kershaw who donate $30 million to a foundation to help underprivileged people in our country. Is one of the ball players. So is Mike Trout. They're very philanthropic. I think what people forget is they're the reason people buy tickets for. You know, Dan Rooney, the late Steelers owner, he had the one best line of any owner I've ever heard in sports. He said, nobody buys a ticket to come see the owner's box. They buy the ticket to see the players. He never begrudged the players for making money. And you've seen steps the last couple weeks. The owner of the Oakland A's, he wouldn't even pay $400 to minor league baseball players. He's a $2 billionaire man. The Washington Nationals come off the greatest year in their history. The Lerner family cut the minor league player salary by $100 a week. I mean, the players saw the Major League Baseball draft go from 60 rounds where you had Mike Piazza, 62nd round. You had Ryan Sandberg in the 20th round. There's five guys out of Plaques in Cooperstown that were drafted in later rounds. They cut the draft down to five rounds, and they're only going to play the players after the fifth round, $20,000. So there's a lot of bad blood. You have to understand that the players, they also have a collective bargaining agreement coming up in 2 years. So you have to, and I'm a business owner, so I'm telling you from I see objectively this, that the players have some real legitimate reasons to dig their cleats in the ground right now, because it looks to me like the owners are trying to break the players' union.
Well, that's really difficult to do in baseball. I think baseball, even more than any of the other sports, has an extremely powerful union, and that's part of the issue here. Let's be honest, the union doesn't want to take a step back or take a hit or compromise, because it might, in fact, take away from their power or be seen as weak in terms of negotiating. So I agree with you. The owners are taking a lot of the baby steps that would seem like they wouldn't matter at all. Although, you know, many companies around the country are doing the same thing, where they're cutting a little here and a little there so they don't have to wipe out, you know, jobs as a whole. So I understand your point, and I do believe that the owners, in most cases, are so financially set that they don't need to worry about it, even if they take one season of major losses. At the same time, they are the ones who stand to lose the most, and I understand why they're asking the players to take on part of that. And the guys that are making the minimum wage, quote-unquote, Mark, they're the ones who would be taking very small pay cuts under the sliding salary scale. So we'll see. Yeah, again, it's billionaires and millionaires in many cases arguing, which is kind of ick. Thanks for your phone call from Fort Lauderdale. Let's see. Let's talk to Tim, who's in New Jersey. Welcome to After Hours.
Good morning, Amy. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Regarding I don't know what you'd call it, if it was an accident, a murder in Minnesota. I know that's bad and everything, but what's going on in all the major cities is tenfold on what happened in Minnesota.
Oh, okay, Tim, I appreciate your phone call. I don't think that that's an opinion that's shared by a lot of people, but you're welcome to share your opinion. The officer who kneeled on the neck of George Floyd has been charged with murder, and there are likely to be other charges against the officers who stood by and didn't do anything. We'll see what happens once that goes through the justice system. But, I mean, the accusation is murder, and I'm not sure how it could be explained any other way. It's tragic and it's heartbreaking. I will agree with you on this point, Tim. Those people who are just happen to be in line of the violence and some of the looting that's taking place, not protesting. Many cases that's peaceful. Most cases that's peaceful. But those people who are losing their businesses and seeing their property damaged and stolen, that's also tragic. It's tragic in a different way. I mean, it's not murder, but it doesn't mean that those people, are any less devastated by what's happening. And it just, it, it, gosh, it's crazy, and it breaks my heart that a lot of people who have barely survived, business owners or employers who barely survived the virus, if they survived at all, are in some cases now seeing their property completely destroyed. So yeah, looting and protesting are not the same thing. Looting is also a crime. Looting and violence and stealing, thieves, that's not the same as protesting. And unfortunately, it gets grouped together a lot of times. And people are taking advantage of the situation. So as I mentioned, there's plenty of evil and there's plenty of hate. It's all just heavy and it's hard. And I'm not going to make any political statements or decide what's worse, because I don't think that's fair. And we all have different opinions. I really don't want to take a lot of calls or any, really. You're welcome to find me on social media about what's happening in our country, because it's hard to open that Pandora's box, and I can't control what people say. And some of those things I don't want expressed on my radio show. So I don't know that we're going to take calls about what's happening, but you're welcome to find me on social media if you would like to express your opinion. We will take calls about the NBA or about Major League Baseball, if that's what you want to talk about. That's fine, and we're still mostly doing a sports show, as odd as it is. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Let's see. You can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page, 855-212-4227. And we will get right back to it. I mentioned the NBA's got this kind of group of proposals, so we'll throw those out there for you.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Ryan McDonough, former Suns general manager, worked in the NBA and was a guest on JR Sport Brief on CBS Sports Radio to talk about the NBA's return to play. Now, there are various proposals that are out there. I think the NBA is in the same space where Major League Baseball was, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, where we kept hearing different concepts, different ideas, and the league, spurred by the commissioner, Adam Silver, are still the league owners and, you know, the front office execs led by Adam, are still trying to figure out what plan makes the most sense. Now, we didn't hear kind of the run up and the planning and the brainstorming from the NHL. What we got was the framework when they had decided. They still have issues to work out, but at least we know 24 teams with a bit of a play-in tournament, 5-game series, and the opportunity for any teams that were within striking distance of the playoffs to be able to play into the Stanley Cup bracket in lieu of finishing the regular season. Will Major League Baseball be able to get on the field in this void before the NHL and the NBA return? That's my question, because the NHL says no training camp before no training camp before July 10th. The NBA is reportedly targeting the last day of July as its return. So... Okay, I know this is totally, it's not really self-serving. This is not me as a host. This is me as a fan. I am stunned that neither hoops nor hockey will have any games before the end of July at the earliest. I don't get it. The NBA still doesn't know what the plan will look like. In fact, they're considering a 22-game format, a 20-game format, a 16-game format. They're considering playing some more regular season games, not playing any regular season games, going straight to the playoffs. So the latest that we'd heard in terms of proposals to get voted on, to be presented and voted on to the Board of Governors, is a 22-team plan. That could actually be up for a vote this week. And it's getting support among owners, according to Adrian Wojnarowski and then Ramona Shelburne, who also is an ESPN NBA insider. But this is just a proposal. There's no indication yet that this one will be the plan they settle on, only that they've at least got something up for a vote. We do believe that Orlando is where they're going to end up. So there's no more two hub city plan. Now it's just, it sounds like a pop song from the 90s, two hub city. There's no two city plan. It would just be the Y World of Sports Complex in Orlando on the Disney property. A bubble-like atmosphere, but players would be allowed to leave. And in this proposal, any teams within six games of the final playoff spot would be allowed the chance to get in, to continue playing. Similar to the NHL, where they've got a format that would include those teams that were close that might have been able to squeeze into the playoffs had the regular season been finished on time. So if you look at the six game within six games, and you look at that lens within six games, the Wizards, who are right now 5.5 games behind the Orlando Magic, would be the only extra team from the East that isn't currently in the playoff standings. Okay, so right now we've got the top eight. The top eight were frozen when the season was suspended indefinitely on March 11th. Nothing's changed, obviously, in the standings since then. But if the Board of Governors and the NBA goes forward with this idea that any team within six games of the playoffs or within six games of the last team in the playoffs in both the East and the West, that would allow the Wizards a shot to get in. So the Wizards are number nine in the East currently. They're 5.5 games out of that final playoff spot behind the Magic. The Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics had already clinched playoff spots. The Heat, the Pacers, the Sixers, the Nets, the Magic would round out the top eight in the East. The Wizards would be allowed to play in or have the chance to play in. Now, in the West, it's a completely different story. Four teams are within six games of the last playoff spot. So we know the Lakers and the Clippers had already clinched. Oh, I'm sorry. The Clippers didn't clinch, but they were close. The Lakers have clinched the only playoff spot in the West to date. Clippers, Nuggets, Jazz, Thunder, Rockets, Mavericks, Grizzlies are all in the playoffs, let's say, if they started today. Oh, my gosh. It's been so long since we've used that phrase. It's because there are no playoffs starting today. Not even hypothetically. So those top eight would be resuming in Orlando. But then you would also have Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento, and San Antonio because they're all within six games. Essentially, that only leaves three teams in the West that wouldn't play again. Now, what did Damian Lillard say last week? That if he doesn't have the chance to get to the postseason, he's not interested in getting back to basketball. The Warriors, I mean, they've only won 15 games. They'd already said they're acting like this season is over. And for them, it would be. For the Suns, the Timberwolves, it would be over. In the East, the Hornets, Bulls, Knicks, Pistons, Hawks, and Cavaliers would not have any more games. They would be done. I emphasize again, this is only a plan. Looking at what the NHL has done to kind of expand that playoff field or at least give other teams the chance to get into the traditional Stanley Cup bracket, it seems like the NBA is looking at something similar. From anywhere from 16 teams, which is what they currently have, that would be the traditional, or up to 20, 21, 22, 23. There's anywhere like a range of 20 to 24 teams that might be included. So all of this is still up in the air. And a little bit complicated, so I hope I didn't make it even more hard or more difficult to understand by the way I explained it. That would mean I did a terrible job. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Let's hear from Ryan McDonough one more time. The plan that makes the most sense, according to the former Suns general manager.
I think the 20-team proposal makes the most sense to me, JR. If you look at the standings in the Eastern Conference, there were eight teams in the 15-team conference that were clearly better than the rest. The Washington Wizards, as I mentioned, sit ninth, but they are 5.5 games behind the Orlando Magic, and they have a 24-40 record. Keep in mind that one of their best players, John Wall, has not played all year, and everything I'm hearing out of Washington is that John Wall would not play if the season were resumed and the Wizards were included in the resumption of the season. And then in the Western Conference, I think, you know, those four teams I mentioned, Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento, San Antonio, if they had between 15 and 19 games left in the regular season, all four of those teams were within four games of the eighth spot, which is currently held by Memphis. So I think looking at the schedule Memphis had remaining when the league was suspended on March 11th, some of the teams, especially New Orleans, had a much easier schedule. And keep in mind that the Pelicans returned Zion Williamson to play in January and played a lot better since Zion got back in the lineup. So that one makes the most sense to me, JR. It's two-thirds of the league. 20 out of the 30 teams go, the top eight in the East, the top 12 in the West. And, you know, if they play a certain number of regular season games, my guess is they play enough games so every team finishes at 72 games, and then they can see who the best eight teams are in each playoffs and play a playoff format with seven-game series played out over four rounds.
This is a former general manager with the Phoenix Suns, Ryan McDonough, who says 20 teams is the proposal that makes the most sense to him. He doesn't think the Wizards should be included. They're 5.5 games out, and their superstar John Wall reportedly wouldn't play even if the Wizards did return and had the chance to make the postseason. I don't know. There might be other players who say the same thing, but there might also be teams like the Pelicans who you'd think would love to be able to try to get some of that momentum back again and potentially play their way into the postseason. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. Also on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and on our Facebook page. The part that bums me out, as I said, that it, just so disappointing, is that neither hoops nor hockey is looking at games before the end of July. And it could be early August. I don't understand that. Maybe they're waiting for the virus numbers to flatten out even more, but there's no guarantee that will happen. And they would still have to go through the same testing protocols. They would still have to be tested for the virus before they entered this Orlando bubble-like area. They would still have to go through daily health and physical checks. They would still have to be in situations where they would be making physical contact. And so if you test them and they're all negative, well, then you know going in at least that they can play basketball as a contact sport without the fear of the virus. It would be when someone would leave the bubble and come back that maybe you have to be careful. You have to be a little more vigilant. But that's going to happen no matter when they restart. I do not understand the whole idea of waiting until end of July. Why not end of June to get back on the court and to take advantage of these individual workouts, at least to get their sea legs under them? So I don't really understand why the delay. I don't really get it. I know there are still a few facilities that haven't reopened, but the Boston Celtics are planning to reopen for these individual workouts coming up on Monday. There were eight facilities that were still closed. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker was inviting back sports teams on Sunday.
We've also had very positive conversations with our professional sports teams, the Celtics, the Bruins, the Patriots, the Red Sox, and the Revolution. And this order will also allow professional sports teams to begin practicing at their facilities in compliance with the health and safety rules that all the leagues are developing.
Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker kind of echoing what we've heard from various governors around the country, New York, California, New Jersey, Texas. I could dot all over the country, Florida, Arizona, in various phases, but wanting the sports teams to know they can reopen their facilities if they're following the mandates. The Celtics plan to do that on Monday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Let's see if we can work in a quick phone call. Vernon is in Manhattan. Vernon, you got 60 seconds. Go.
Hey, Amy, how you doing?
I'm good.
Quick basketball question. Name this player.
Uh-oh.
This player played college basketball. The problem was the player had a difficulty shooting the left hand. So the coach had the person tie their hand in the back to teach this person to be ambidextrous as a basketball player. Hey, who's that player?
I don't know, but honest to God, my coach did that to me in high school.
That's right. The answer, it is you. Have a nice day.
Vernon, that was cute. It is true. My coach, it was awful. My coach made me cry because when I was in high school, I mean, I still cry a lot, but when I was in high school, I was far more sensitive. And the rest of the team would be practicing at the other end of the court, having fun, scrimmaging, running through all these cool drills. There are a couple of practices, in fact, over the course of a week, where my high school coach made me play at the other end on my own with one hand tied behind my back, my right hand, so that I would learn how to shoot hook shots, layups, everything else with my left hand. And I hated it. I was furious. But it turned me into a player that could go either way, right or left. And it was great for my college career moving forward. So I suppose I should thank him. We're 3 hours in. That was a funny call.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.